Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program once again Brian Johnson, Associate Professor of Journalism at the University of Illinois. He teaches photojournalism. He's a graduate advisor in the College of Communications, has a background as a newspaper photographer before he became a teacher, and has been working with cameras for a long time. And also for quite a long time, he's been stopping by every once in a while here on the show. And we chat a little bit about photography and cameras, and also give people who are listening a chance to ask questions. And that's what we'll be doing here this morning. If you were a pro, if you are a very serious hobbyist, if you are someone who just takes snapshots on when you're on vacation and on family gatherings, any and all questions of those levels are certainly welcome. If you have questions about the equipment, about cameras, about lenses, about film, if there are still people there who are still shooting film, or about technique, you know, things that you can do just to make the pictures better, anything that has to do with that, you can give us a call. And I know that Brian will see if he can help you out. 333-9455, that's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere you can hear us. And that is 333-9455, excuse me. 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. You have questions, you can give us a call. Thanks very much for being
here. Yeah, glad to be here.
We're just talking a little bit about how there was an article, and I expect probably a lot of people saw it, in our local newspaper, the News Gazette, a few weeks ago about a local camera shop, an independently owned camera store that has been in business in Champaign-Urbana for quite a long time. And that we were all really struck by an article about how their business has changed, that the fellow who owns the place now is his only employee. It's
right.
Just him, and he's
right.
Running it. And the other thing that really struck me when I saw the story was that he is not stocking any more film cameras. It's all digital.
Right, exactly, because nobody is coming in asking for film anymore, and he's not even stocking film anymore because it's just not selling.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in that article, there was a piece in there about good friends of mine, Rich and Pat Becker, that ran Film Processing Limited, and they actually had their last day in business last week, Thursday. And I stopped by there on Friday, but they closed on Thursday. Yeah, so you know, and they did you know, printing from film, and but they also had, you know, a digital end of it. But still, it was just you know, with the inkjet printers that have come on, and you know, some of the color laser printers, people have really you know, it isn't like it used to be.
Well, that's over the time that we've been talking. I don't know how long it's been now, but that has been the biggest change. I remember when we first started talking about digital photography, it was something that a handful of professional photojournalists
right.
were using. The equipment was very expensive. And we were talking about how, well, one of these days, you know, we expect that it could be the prices will come down and become more popular. And it's just really remarkable now how digital photography, digital cameras has taken over.
Right, right. And it's certainly something that I knew was going to happen. It was clear that it was coming. And prices have come down to the point where, you know, you can buy a 4-megapixel camera. So a megapixel is how you rate the resolution, how much detail you can record on the chip in general terms. And so a 4-megapixel camera is, you know, really decent. You can get a good size, you know, 8x10, maybe an 11x14, you know, with the proper printer. And, you know, $100, $150, $160, you know, just depending upon the brand and the features of it. So, gosh, you know, you don't have to buy film anymore. You can buy the little memory cards, and there is an issue of printing your pictures. That's, you know, really changed with the digital, but mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, for people who, well, I guess maybe the question is, now who is going to shoot film besides maybe artists who use photography as their medium and are interested in using that technique and doing the different things that you can do with manipulating the image.
Right.
Are regular folks going to shoot film?
No. I think regular folks will shoot film if they already have film cameras and they have a big investment in that. You know, I think film's going to be around for, you know, for a while yet, but as far as, you know, how easily are you going to be able to buy it and, you know, get it processed and all that, I mean, I think those days are going to be numbered.
Well, I just have to pass on here a message to you from Mr. Bates. He's listening. Hey there. And he says to tell Brian, no, he's still selling film.
Oh, he is still selling film.
Still,
okay.
Still selling film.
Let me correct that. Go to Bates Camera and buy film.
Go to Bates Camera and
Thank
buy film.
Thank you for calling.
But I hope it is true what I said, though, that all the cameras, all the equipment now that he was selling is all digital. No, you can't go in there and buy a film camera. You can buy film, but you're not going to buy a camera.
You know, I was actually talking to Rod, and if Rod's listening, he can, you know, think back to this conversation the last time I was in there. But he said, you know, it isn't just in the photography realm that he also gets a fly fishing magazine. And these, you know, stores that sell fly fishing gear, they're having the same problem, too, that these, you know, with the internet and the big box stores, you know, the larger sporting goods stores that move into an area, you know, people can get at least some selection. You might not be able to get the expert advice that you would get at your local store. And that's part of the equation, too, is that it's not just the technology for any medium, whether your medium is fly fishing or photography, but it's also a change in the economy and sort of our FedEx economy, if you will, that's allowed some of this to happen. Mm-hmm.
Well, we do have a caller to talk with, someone listening in Indiana, so why don't we do that? We'll talk with them. Line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I'm glad you started off the way you did, because my question is along those lines, and in the past I've just asked regular photographic questions, but this one deals more economically. You've already mentioned about the, I guess we'll call them the mom-and-pop stores. What did this do to the big boys, Kodak, and some of the Japanese outfits that were into regular, you know, 35-millimeter cameras and stuff? Did they just switch? You talked about the processing. Has anybody speeded it up so it makes it a little more easier for people when they drop off their film to even get in it faster? I was in a store the other day, and they were the digital, you know, bring us in, we'll have it back to you in an hour. And I thought, God, that's competition, all right.
Right, right.
And I just wonder if you could speak generally about the dislocation of the general, photography business as a whole thing.
Sure, sure. Well, there's a big uproar with the Kodak shareholders. So I think it was last year. I don't remember the exact date, but it was, you know, within the recent past where they basically said that they weren't really going to invest money in research and development into film anymore, that they were going to go all to digital. And the shareholders, you know, well, but film is our, you know, film is our thing. That's our area. And, you know, the people at Kodak were saying, yeah, you know, yeah, it used to be, but, you know, it's not cutting it for us anymore. If you look at Kodak and if you look at Fuji, they both are rather aggressively in the digital camera market. Some of the Kodak cameras, I think, are the most aggressively priced cameras for their specifications that are out there. Fuji has a slightly different technology for their pixels and their chips, which is kind of neat. They're more of a, I think they're an octagon shape. But, you know, with their FinePix line, I mean, they've been very aggressive marketing that. So, you know, so it's a shift. I mean, I think these companies, I think Kodak was probably, well, I don't really want to say that Kodak was slow, because Kodak really did move into the digital realm pretty quickly. You know, they, in fact, for the professional cameras, they had one of the first professional digital cameras. They were taking, in the beginning, they were taking Nikon cameras and then retrofitting them with digital imaging sensors. And then they're also taking Canon cameras and doing the same thing. So they were really one of the first to do that, and their products were excellent. If anything, they might have been a little bit slow really pushing hard into the consumer end. But even there, you know, Kodak, you know, once they came out, they've been very aggressive pushing things. They've been doing some things like ease of use issues where you can, you know, plug your camera, just you can dock it right on top of a printer and print directly from your camera. So they've been aggressive in that way. And as I say, Fuji, too, was, you know, the major Japanese manufacturer. They've moved really firmly. I think they probably have a broader line of cameras than Kodak does. But Well, that's what's happened.
The caller also asked the question about if you have a dealing with processing if you have a digital camera. You know,
right.
How do you get something that you can look at? And that's, you know, the cameras, there are a lot of cameras, and they're priced attractively. They're within the range of a lot of people. And if you have already at home, if you have a computer, and if you have a printer, you're good to go.
Right.
You're going to need some processing
right.
software.
Right.
But, you know, then the question is for all those people who don't have computers or don't want to do that,
right.
then can we make it easy for them to get prints of
absolutely
their
and that's
cameras.
that's been something else that's changed in the last year or so. On the printer side, a lot of inkjet printers now are coming with slots for the memory cards, so that, you know, you can, you know, any of the six or eight different types of memory cards, you can just put it in your printer. A number of the printers also have a little LCD screen, a little screen, so that when you put in your card, you can see what the picture is before you print it. I know that Hewlett-Packard has a technology where you can print out like a little contact sheet. And then you can mark which print you want and send it through. So that's on the home end. The other thing that's happened is a lot of the discount stores have photo kiosks. So you can go in with your CD or your memory card, just plug it in, and it's like a computer terminal right there, and it lets you crop it and adjust things. And then print it out right there in the store. And so that's a pretty cool thing. So you can do your own enlargements and all that. Now, that's a neat thing because you can do it yourself and control the cropping, but it's also a bad thing because you have to do it yourself. You know, you've got to spend the time yourself. So that's been a shift. But there has been a big shift as far as that goes. There are also internet services where you can upload your photos to the service, and then they'll print them out and send them. Even to the point where you can upload your photos and, you know, say to all your friends, go to this website, and you can order your own pictures from Grandma and Grandpa's 50th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, are there more people taking pictures now? I wonder how this shift has affected the total number of
right.
folks out there who have cameras
right.
and are taking
right.
pictures of things.
Well, my son, who's in kindergarten, Andrew, just had his holiday sing presentation at his school, at Dr. Howard's school. And so I was there with my camera shooting. But there were, you know, there's parents there with video cameras, and there was also a few parents there with their camera phones, their
yeah.
cell phones pointed out. So has the number increased? Well, I don't have any hard numbers on that. But it seems to me that with the camera phones, you know, in the market now, I think that, yes, I think because of that and the ease of it, and it's new and exciting, yeah, mm-hmm. there's been a resurgence in interest in it.
My guest is Brian Johnson. He's associate professor of journalism at U of I. He teaches photojournalism at the university within the College of Communications, and every once in a while he's here. We talk about photography and cameras, and questions are welcome, and we have several people ready to go. 333-9455. That's the local number here, Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Callers in order here, starting with line one in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Since you brought up Kodak and Fuji, I had a question regarding the longevity now of their papers. Is Kodak even in the ballpark with regard to longevity issues? And the second question related is the Epson inkjet printer papers. What's the longevity on those? And I'm sure it might vary with the paper, but if you could just address any general comments, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure. Epson in particular has some technologies for their inkjets where they claim that the longevity of the print, if you're using the proper inks and the proper paper, that it can be up to 100 years, which is actually better than a traditional photographic color print. So what you need to do, though, is you need to do a little bit of research on, you know, what inks and what paper combinations that they're saying. I know I haven't looked into this recently because I've been doing more, you know, multimedia work. So I haven't been actually printing. I've just been keeping it in the computer format. But I know for a while, if you use their matte papers and their, you know, ultra inks, that they were saying 100 years for the longevity. I know there was a problem earlier on with the inkjets where there was a lot of fading, particularly in the magenta. But I think they've really addressed that because they knew that that was going to be an issue. You know, at some of the, there are other technologies, though. You know, there are color laser printers, but then there's also sort of a dye sublimation process that gives you more of a photographic type print. So if you look at your average, you know, color print and your, you know, average printout, I would say there's probably good, I think there's a good comparison there as far as their stability.
Okay. I don't know. Did we get at your question, caller?
And a further question regarding the two current papers that both Fuji and Kodak make. Kodak makes the Endura paper, trying to do some catch-up to Fuji's Crystal Archive. Any notes on longevity on the Endura paper? I've been looking on websites. I haven't found anything. I didn't know if you had an inside word there.
I haven't seen anything either. So if you find anything, let us know.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to another Urbana person. This is line number two. Hello.
We finally splurged on a Nikon N70 about 7 years ago after having come back from traveling in Nepal and not being happy with the cameras that we had, or one of the cameras that we had. And I really, really like the fact that it can... it has a couple of point-and-shoot settings, but you can also override it, those things. And it's taken pictures in really low lighting conditions, figured out the lighting and taken the pictures for me. And it's fast in terms of if I see somebody doing something and I want to catch it really quick, it doesn't take long to set up the camera. I press the button and takes the picture. One of the things I've heard about a number of these electronic cameras is that there's a lag time between the
right.
time you press the button and the time the picture is actually taken, and your subject, what you were trying to get, may be totally gone. So that's useless as far as I'm concerned. We've also traveled with an Olympus stylus, and we have the two cameras. One of us takes one and one takes the other, and it's nice to have a little pocket camera as well. But I also do genealogy, and I've read that other genealogists sometimes take a digital camera and use it to photograph documents. Saves on printing costs, means that sometimes you can actually copy a document that you can't put on a photocopier, et cetera. So you need to be able to take close-ups. So I'm wondering. Oh, and my other concern is battery life. These things have to just gobble up batteries. And I read in Consumer Reports that it can be handy if you have a camera that has easily purchasable batteries. The new Nikons apparently have to use their particular batteries. You can't go in and buy batteries at the local whatever store is around necessarily. And so I'm wondering if you have any suggestions about what to do. I might splurge again and get the electronic version of the Nikon to fit the Tamron lens that I have for it, and the macro lens that I have for it. But you'd have to buy their proprietary batteries to go with the camera. So that,
right.
that concerns me. We had some wild turkeys across the street a couple of weeks ago, and it was cold, and a neighbor came out to take a picture. I'm sitting there to take a picture with the Nikon, and the neighbor comes running down the street to take a picture, and she said, "Oh, my batteries are dead. I can't take a picture." You know, so I got the pictures, and she didn't.
Right.
And I'll share them. I don't want to be in that situation.
Right. Okay. Well, let's talk about the batteries first. With many of the point-and-shoot cameras, they'll take AA batteries, so that's convenient. One thing Canon had done for a while is that the batteries that they used in their digital cameras also were the same batteries that they used on their video cameras. Did I say that right? So if you had a still camera and a video camera, both made by Canon, they use the same batteries. So you could double up on that. So some of the cameras that have rechargeable battery packs, yes, you have to buy their own batteries. But it's like with a lot of things, you learn what you need to do for that camera and, you know, you just work around that. Yes, it can be tremendously inconvenient to have batteries that go dead, particularly if you have rechargeable batteries and you forgot your charger. I've been in that position, and I know it's really not very good. Many of the point-and-shoot cameras, though, just take double A's, and that's very convenient. So you just swap out the double A's. My students in this last semester, I think they were going through a fair number of batteries. But if the cameras only are using two batteries at a time or four batteries at a time, I think people are pretty used to, you know, taking a lot of batteries with them and, you know, getting them on sale so you have a good selection of them. You know, even a lot of the most recent film cameras, you were dead without your batteries there too. So, batteries are still an issue. Maybe they didn't use the batteries quite as much as a digital camera might. You know, there are some ways you can help yourself to extend the battery life of a digital camera. But some of it is you just have to get used to having batteries that are charged or having extra batteries with you. As far as, you know, moving and going to a different camera, you know, Nikon does have a number of cameras that are, you know, right in the line of your N70. They just came out with the D200. So the street price on this, I think, is going to be $1,700, just a mere $1,700.
More than I paid for the N70.
But they do have a couple, you know, model lines that are lower. One thing about the D200 is that it has a 10-megapixel chip, which is pretty amazing. So there's some advantages there. And as you say, since you have the lenses, you know, with a lot of these cameras, you know, with the Nikons in particular, you can use the same lenses. So that protects your investment in that way. But as I say, you know, Nikon has other models that aren't as expensive. This is just the newest and the greatest model.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have a suggestion for another brand that would meet my requirements, including being able to take clear enough close-ups of a document to be able to read on a printout?
Sure. You know, a 5 or 6 megapixel camera is going to give you pretty good resolution. I mean, obviously, the higher the resolution, but there's also something else. It's not necessarily just the resolution of the chip, but it's also the size of the imaging chip itself that can make a difference. And all of the manufacturers, usually in the higher end of it, they'll have what's called a full-frame sensor. And by full-frame, they mean it's the same size as a piece of 35-millimeter film was. And so it's not just the resolution of the chip that makes a difference, but how large the imaging sensor is itself. So that's something that you can look at. But honestly, depending upon, you know, what kind of resolving power you really want for the documents, you know, even a 5 or 6 megapixel camera is going to do a great job. It is a really neat way to do this. One thing you might want to consider, though, is buying a macro lens, probably a 50-millimeter macro lens, because those lenses are engineered to be sharp from edge to edge, corner to corner. And for documents, that's really important. I would say you'd also want to invest in some sort of tripod because when you're getting in kind of close on the documents, you know, just a little bit of just normal kind of body movement back and forth can make the image go just a little bit in and out of focus.
Yeah, I've got 2 tripods.
Good.
That I could travel with.
Yeah, great. And then there's also an issue. You have to be really careful when you're setting it up that it's square, you know, so that's not tilted one way or another compared to the document. And that can be a little bit of an issue. But I think that's an awesome, you know, way to do it. And I think you can get, you know, easily as good, if not better, resolution by photographing it than you could if you had a scanner with you.
Mm.
So
I want to mention to people that you can buy little mini tripods. I haven't gone shopping for them lately, that are flexible so that you can... a lot of people don't take pictures of themselves in a group or if they're traveling.
Right.
They don't know how to where to put the camera, but with a mini tripod, it fits in a camera case, and I don't know, it's about, I don't know, 4 or 5 inches long.
Right.
And you can adjust it so you can sit it on some object and adjust it so it shows you, and then you learn how to use the self-timer, and there you are in the picture.
Right, right, right.
And it's so nice to be able to do that, so I wanted to offer that as a stocking stuffer idea for people, for
okay.
whatever camera they have.
Great.
That's a bunch. Bye.
All right, well, thanks for the call. We are at our midpoint here. Our guest is Brian Johnson. He is Associate Professor of Journalism in the U of I Department of Journalism in College Communications and teaches photojournalism and has been a photographer for a long time. Worked at one time for the News Gazette newspaper here, taking pictures. And occasionally he's here on the program and we talk about photography and cameras. And if you have questions, whether that be about the hardware part or about the technique part, you can give us a call, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next up, we'll talk with someone in Peoria on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a question about a camera. I'm going to be going to Egypt for about 3 weeks, and I'm interested in a camera that's real compact, something I can maybe fit in my pocket. That's also compatible with an Apple computer. I'd like some pretty good quality. I know there's like 4 or 5 megapixel. And then I also wanted something with some video capability so I could take maybe short snippets of video, maybe 10 seconds or 20 seconds of video.
Sure.
And I just wanted to get a recommendation.
Sure. Well, all of the major manufacturers are going to have a camera that fits that, you know, Canon, Nikon, Fuji, and what's interesting about all the cameras is that they all implement their features a little bit differently. I think there's been a little bit of a standardization as far as you know the little icons that they're using for getting at the different shooting modes, etc. But I always advise people to go somewhere where they can actually handle the cameras and see how they function, if it makes sense to you. You know, some of them, they have a little, kind of a little cover that closes over the lens.
Right.
Well, on some of them, you might look at it and say, you know what, if I put that in my pocket, you know, that's going to get mashed and it's not going to work. But this other manufacturer, the way it works, I think that looks better. So I'm always a little bit hesitant to give exact advice because what makes sense to me when I'm looking at a camera and how it operates might seem really awkward and not make sense to you when you're using it. But I think any of the manufacturers, any of the main ones, you know, Fuji, Kodak,
okay,
Nikon, Canon. I've been a Canon shooter for a long time. I pretty much only buy Canon cameras.
Okay.
I've been really happy with the Canons. I've had, you know, students use them for a long time, and they've actually held up fairly well. But that doesn't mean that, you know, some of the other manufacturers don't have good cameras as well. And it's so important, though, that you actually see how you get to the different features and if it makes sense to you, because that's really going to be the determining factor as far as whether you're frustrated or happy with the camera.
Okay. I know some of the other callers were citing things like 5 megapixels and the previous callers doing documents, and she wanted like a 7 megapixel. What do you recommend for someone like myself who's going to be hopefully taking pictures of the pyramids?
Sure. You know, it's almost going to come down to price. I would, this will sound ridiculous maybe, you know, spend as much money as you have.
No kidding.
But at some point, you know, what you're going to get for, you know, more for the higher prices is you're going to get maybe a longer video run. So, you know, maybe you're going to have, you know, the ability to shoot, you know, a video for a minute or two. You know, maybe it's going to have higher resolution. You know, the features aren't going to get that much more. Some of them, for instance, will have an LCD screen that you can flip out and spin to different, you know, directions. And that can be handy if you're holding the camera over your head and taking a picture.
Okay.
Yes, I think that, you know, spending more money and getting a camera that has more megapixels is good. But honestly, for many people, a 4, 5, or 6 megapixel camera is really good for, you know, the kind of general uses that they're doing. I mean, you can get a pretty good size enlargement from that.
Okay. So you think a 5 or 6 megapixel?
I think that'd be plenty good. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, my first kind of SLR, you know, nice digital camera that came out with a remarkable low price of only $3,000. When it came out, it had like a, you know, 2.6 megapixel sensor, and I was ecstatic with that, you know. So really, you know, like a, even a 4-megapixel camera is going to give you really decent, you know, quality images.
Okay, and then what about zoom?
You know, what you have to look out for with the zooms is be sure that you're looking only at the optical part of the zoom, because a lot of the manufacturers will say, you know, a 4X optical and, you know, a 3X digital. Well, all that the digital zoom is doing is it's cropping into your image and enlarging that smaller part of the image. So it's really only the optical part of the zoom that makes any difference. And in fact, with the video cameras I have for my students and the, you know, still cameras, I tell them not to use the digital zoom at all, because it's reducing the quality of the image when you do that.
Okay.
So I would look for the optical zoom. You know, a 3X or 4X is great. There is a type of digital camera that has it. It looks like a single lens reflex camera, kind of like the professional type of cameras, but it has an electronic viewfinder. So the viewfinder is a little bit like looking through a video camera. I'm not really a big fan of those, but one advantage of a camera like that is that the zoom range, sometimes those will have up to like a 10X zoom, and that can be really handy.
Right.
You just have to suffer with the electronic viewfinder, which can be kind of an annoyance.
It can be cumbersome.
Yeah, I think so. Just in my...
Okay, are there any other options or specifications I should be looking for?
Well, some of the cameras have accessory lenses that you can put on. So if you want, you know, more of a wide angle look, something that's kind of fun to do is some of the cameras have a panorama mode. So I would look into whether they have the panorama mode, because when you're done with that, what you can do is go on your computer and stitch all these pictures together, and you can move around your picture.
I've seen that before.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of cool. So that's sort of a neat feature.
That's called the panoramic.
Yeah, panorama mode. Yeah, it isn't, you know, it isn't shooting in a widescreen mode, but you shoot several pictures and then you stitch them together.
Okay, that would that'd be nice. All right, I think that's it. What type of price range should I be looking at?
You know what? I just bought some 4-megapixel Canon cameras at a discount store. The lowest price I'd ever seen, it was, you know, $149. Mm-hmm. But I would think you should expect to pay probably
$200.
$200. Yeah.
Okay, good deal. Well, yeah. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, sure. Very good. Thanks for the call. Just real quick, to pick up on one point you mentioned, it was one of the things that I was thinking about asking you about. For people who had been used to using 35-millimeter SLR single-lens reflex cameras, those are the ones where the viewfinder actually looks through
the
lens.
Right.
So you see what the camera sees. With the digital pictures now, digital cameras now, mostly what you're getting is, as you said, it's like looking at a little television.
Right.
It's not the same kind of view.
No. Now, what's interesting about this, though, is that even the little point-and-shoot digital cameras, these, you know, $100 and $200 ones, if you turn on the little screen and back, you have a single lens reflex camera because you're seeing what the lens is seeing. So that's kind of a cool feature.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when people shoot with these cameras, though, it's sort of interesting. And I do this too. You look at the little screen and you hold the camera away from you so you can do that. That doesn't give you quite as stable of a shooting position as if you're looking through the little viewfinder. So something else that I always look for with these cameras is I want a little viewfinder window. Some of them only have the little screen, the little LCD screen with no viewfinder window, but I like having the option of using, you know, both.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Next caller is in Charleston, line 3. Hello.
Hi. I have more of a printer question.
Okay.
Now that it's the Christmas season, I was all psyched to buy my husband a printer for the laser, I mean, to be able to take digital pictures and make his own copies. And I was ready to buy one, and then it dawned on me. I'd been looking at the newspapers also, and it seemed as though the price to have them done at a Walgreens or Osco's or something seemed so inexpensive.
Right.
That I didn't know if I felt like maybe what I was doing is simply thinking about buying him something because it's a toy, as opposed to that it would really make sense for him to have his own.
Right. Right. Well, and I think some of the question is, you know, how much of a hobbyist is your husband? You know, is he the type that would take a lot of, you know, pride in the fact that he, you know, maybe was able to adjust these images on his computer and print them out right at home, and then would print out another one after you'd refined it a little bit more. And if, you know, that's the kind of person that he is, then he'd probably like to have an inkjet at home. And the quality from the inkjets is really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's probably more of the great, I can do it at home. It's a lot easier to do it at home than to go out someplace and do it.
Right.
But also is an economist, so
right.
He's going to be
exactly.
About
and,
the money issue.
Yeah, and honestly, inkjet printing is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can buy these printers. In fact, what I was doing at some times is instead of getting a new set of ink cartridges, I would wait for the printer to go on sale and just buy a whole new printer. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then unfortunately what I've had happen recently, though, is I'd put in new ink cartridges and the printers, you know, wouldn't function properly. So one of the downsides with a lot of the inkjets is that if you're not using them on a regular basis, the print heads get clogged up and you have to clean them. And it does it automatically, but it still uses ink when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So inkjet printing is amazing. It's beautiful, but it is expensive. So, you know, going down to your, you know, local store and where you can kind of work on it yourself isn't a bad option.
Okay.
And sometimes you can, you know, work on it yourself if you have, you know, a copy of, you know, Photoshop or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can burn them to a CD and take them in and then just print them out at the local place.
Right. So you're still basically playing with the...
Right.
With them in the sense of trying to get the best picture, but you're not having to print it.
Right. Now, something as an interesting option, and I've just done this, actually, and it's supposed to arrive at my doorstep today, but I ordered a color laser printer.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I got is by Konica Minolta. It's supposed to have really nice images. Well, the thing is, color laser printer prices have come way, way down. And so you, but that still means you're going to pay, you know, $300 to $500 or $600 for a color laser printer.
Mm-hmm.
But the advantage is that the cost per print is lower. So it's in the long run, it's probably no more expensive. It's probably even less expensive than an inkjet.
Okay.
The quality maybe isn't quite as good.
Mm-hmm.
But the advantage is if you have computers at home, you know, you can also use it as a normal, you know, printer for text and things like that.
Sure.
So,
sure. So possibly a color laser.
Right, right. As I say, you know, they're going to be, you know, $300 or $400 or $500 to buy it in the first place,
mm-hmm.
but the cost per print could be lower.
Well, and I like the fact that it would have multiple uses.
Right, and some of these color lasers, if you have any kind of home network at home, mm-hmm. you can plug it into your network, and it'll just be available that way.
Cool. All right, well, I'll think about that as a possibility.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go to cell phone line number one. Hello.
Al, good morning.
Yes.
I'm on I-55 approaching Chicago, headed back to work. I'm the vice president for communication at a university in Chicago, and we're in the process of a full digital conversion. By the end of this fiscal year, we will have shut down our dark room, and... this is an operation with 6 graphic designers and 2 photographers. And in the process of doing this, I've learned a couple of things that I think may be of value either to commercial people contemplating the same sort of transition or to home hobbyists as well. But I've been interested to see how much additional technology I've had to buy in order to make this work. one of the first things, for example, we had to do was to provide the graphic designers with color-correcting computer monitors.
Right.
Incredibly frustrating that the, for either a home or a commercial user, that the image that you see on your computer screen is not the image that ultimately prints. So that was an unexpected expense. The other thing, and this again may have some consumer market implications as well, with a couple of our cameras, like a medium format Hasselblad portrait camera, it's actually proven economically positive, favorable, to buy a digital back for the camera because of the investment that we've made in lenses and so forth. And I'm wondering what you see happening perhaps in the consumer market. I, as a hobbyist myself, I've got a reasonable investment in equipment, and I'm wondering if you expect to see digital backs for conventional cameras becoming a more popular item in the consumer market.
Sure. You know, the digital back route was the way we really first got professional-level digital cameras, and that's what Kodak was working on earlier. I think what's happened recently, though, is that Nikon and Canon have come out with digital versions of their cameras that are economically priced. So for, you know, $1,300 or $1,600, you can get an SLR camera that will use all of your Canon or Nikon lenses so you don't lose your investment there and have a really capable digital camera. So I don't see for probably the consumer end the digital back really catching on, but definitely in the medium format end where you have Hasselblads and Bronicas and, you know, Pentaxes that take interchangeable backs, that's a really hot market. And in fact, you see a lot of progress in that area. Hasselblad came out with their own digital back recently, so you don't have to use a third-party digital back on the camera.
Right, right. Well, I'm curious about consumer market monitors, too, in terms of color-correcting monitors. What do you see happening there?
Right. It is a huge issue, and it's something that I talk about with my students all the time. I say, you know what? It doesn't really matter to me how beautiful it looks on the screen, because if we're delivering a newspaper, we don't deliver a computer monitor to their doorstep every day. There are some calibration techniques that you can use on the Macintosh side of things. There's Color Sync that's worked in. So if you have profiles set up for your printer and your device, that can keep the color consistent all the way through. There is some calibration that everyone can do on their monitors, just with the standard everyday monitors. And, for most purposes, you can get pretty close to, from screen to printout. And actually, that's been one of the things that's amazed me is, how consistent you can get. But it exactly as you say, it does take a little bit of work on the part of the person doing the printing to see the printout and learn the different printing features of their printer and learning how to set them so that they can change how it's going to render that print.
Thank you very much.
Sure. All right, thanks. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for your comments.
We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and the guest for the program is Brian Johnson. He's Associate Professor of Journalism in the University of Illinois in the College of Communications. He teaches photojournalism, has been with us before to talk about photography. We have a couple of callers here. We'll try to get everybody in. Just, I'm curious, real quick,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you, do you still have a darkroom? I mean, at the college, is there still a darkroom? A conventional?
Only until I can get the money to rip it out.
So that's good. So it's the day is coming when your students will not do this, the old fashioned darkroom chemical bath thing that photographers
right. Yeah, and in fact, I haven't had a printing darkroom. Well, I've had the capability to do it for a long time, but we haven't made a print, an actual photographic print, in years.
Okay, so it's all your students are doing all digital stuff.
We were using film. And we were processing film and color film we would send out, but then we were scanning in the film into the computer. But then this last year, even though I didn't have the money to get the cameras that I wanted, I went ahead and I had some kind of point-and-shoot cameras. And I had my class this most recent semester shoot all digital, even though they're just little point-and-shoot cameras. And I was amazed at the quality that they got. It really, there wasn't that much difference. The biggest difference I see with the little point-and-shoot cameras is that shooting indoors without a flash, really difficult to get, you know, pictures that don't have subject blur or camera blur. That's the biggest problem. And that's why, for what my students do, I really need to get the digital single-lens reflex cameras.
Mm. All right. Well, let's get back here to people who are listening and go next to Champagne and line two. Hello. Is our caller there? Champagne, I think, line number two. Okay, how about we try line four, which is also, I think, Champagne. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
This sound, hold on a second. Yeah, I have a couple questions. I've been stuck in the 35-millimeter film because my camera always seems to do such a superior image to the less expensive digital camera I have. At what point, you know, how many megapixel does the do they need to get to match the 35-millimeter film?
Sure. You know, some of it, again, depends on the actual physical size of that sensor. But, you know, once you're up around 12 megapixels, it's probably better than film.
Really?
Yeah, so 10...
So it's really right around the corner to get a $1,500 Canon SLR 12 megapixel. I mean, this is something in the next year or so.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because they just came out with their 5D, and that is, it's a 12 megapixel. I think the street price is still around $3,000 on that, but...
Yeah, so just another year or so.
Yeah.
Okay, and my next question is, I've had Canon, and I was recently on a vacation in the British Virgin Islands on a sailboat trip, and I got what could have been a really good image, but there was some shake to it because of the sailboat. Are these Canon lenses with the stabilization, are they a good value? Do they work?
Yes, yeah, they're awesome, actually. Having the optical image stabilization in them, it really does work, and it's incredible. So, you know, if you're in the SLR range like that, I would definitely spend the extra money to get the image stabilization technology.
Now, I lean towards, you know, a lens, and I'm currently shooting like a 28-200. Is there some real downsides to trying to pack all that into one lens?
Well, you know, certainly there is in the engineering, and, you know, if you're going to go with a lens like that, I would try to buy, you know, a lot of times manufacturers will have several different versions of that same lens. They'll have sort of their low-end consumer end, and then they might have a high-end professional end. I always had a philosophy that if there was going to be a defect in the photo, I wanted it to be my fault and not the fault of the technology. So I always tried to buy the best lenses that I could.
Uh-huh.
So if there's like a pro version of any lens that you're looking at, I would try, even though they can be quite a bit more expensive, I think it's worth it. But on the flip side of that, it's been amazing how good the quality is on some of the consumer end cameras. And depending upon what you're using your images for, you know, yeah, it's easy for me to say spend the extra $1,000 in getting the pro quality lens because, you know, what I'd be doing is doing it for publication and things like that. But if most of what you're doing is kind of snapshot stuff or stuff for the web, you know, even though I'd love to say spend the extra $1,000, honestly, you might not need to for what your final output is.
You know, my goal is to have a great 8x10 photo for an office wall, you know.
Yeah.
That's my goal, and I have probably a dozen of them in my office, and I rotate, you know, the new ones in.
Right.
But I'll shoot, you know, a roll of 24, and I'll get one.
Right,
that
sure.
I really like. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, tell me more about the lenses. You know, I figured it, you know, I have like a Tamron. I've never bought a Canon lens.
Uh-huh.
Is the Canon that much better than a professional version of the other lens manufacturers?
You know, I think that the Tamron and the Sigma lenses, for instance, just to name a couple of them, I think they're actually pretty decent. I've tended to stick with the Canon lenses just, you know, just because of that. But I do have a Tamron lens, and I've seen some of the Sigmas, and I think they're maybe not quite as rugged, but I think for the average shooter, they're probably pretty good.
And do they also offer the image stabilization?
That I don't know, because I haven't really looked at them. But I know that, you know, the Canons do.
Well, thank you so much.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Take care.
Well, I thank you for the call, and I'm sorry to say we have a couple of people here we're simply not going to be able to take because we're out of time. I'm sure that not too far in the distant future we can get Brian to come back and we can do it again. Could you real quick, somebody asked off the air, wanted to know, wanted to have some recommendations about cameras for kids. Anything real quick that you could say? If someone wants has a child that wants to give them a camera?
Sure. You know, what's great about the digital cameras now is that the prices have come down so far, you know, that I think if you got them a $100 camera, I know for a lot of people that sounds ridiculous, that's a lot of money, but there are even some kind of cheaper ones. But I think, you know, if you can spare $100, you can get a digital camera. What's great about the digital cameras for kids is they shoot the picture, they can see it right away. So there's an incentive there because they get to see the picture, but they can also see, oh boy, your eyes were closed. I'm going to shoot another one.
Yeah, so that way you end up only printing the pictures that really come out.
Absolutely, as opposed to, you know, my sons, Alex and Andrew, they love taking the camera, but they'll shoot maybe more film pictures than I would want to print. And with the digital, Alex and Andrew could shoot all they wanted, and then we just print the ones that turned out.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be here.
Focus 580, the show, made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates this year, celebrating their 23rd anniversary. Bodywork has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Coming up a little bit later today, an archive program on Focus. Celeste Quinn talked not too long ago with John Katz, who for all of his life has been involved with dogs. And it wasn't until recently, relatively recently, he began to think about how and why humans and animals connect. So you'll have an opportunity to hear a rebroadcast interview with him in the 1 o'clock hour of the afternoon magazine today. Also a chance to talk to Ed Kieser at 12:35. We'll be doing the weather and then taking your travel weather questions. So that's in the afternoon magazine today. It gets underway at noon. We're going to take a break for an update on the market, so stay tuned.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4600.